Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service, where we report the world, however difficult the issue, however hard to reach. Podcasts from the BBC World Service are supported by advertising.
If you're hearing this, you're probably already listening to in-depth stories on BBC Podcasts. But did you know that you can listen to them without ads? Get award-winning storytelling from the BBC, like World of Secrets, Believe in Magic and Uncanny, plus other great BBC podcasts from news to history to comedy, all ad-free. Simply subscribe to BBC Podcast Premium on Apple Podcasts or listen to Amazon Music with a Prime membership. Spend less time on ads and more time with BBC Podcasts.
In 1928, a young Spanish priest called José María Escrivá started a new group within the Catholic Church. He wanted to show ordinary Christians how to lead a holy life, specifically by attending to their professional work with transcendent significance. He called the group Opus Dei, Work of God. Escrivá was canonized in 2002, and today, Opus Dei has 95,000 members worldwide. The group has been dogged by controversies. It's been accused of secrecy, political influence, and of controlling its members. You might have watched The Da Vinci Code, in which Opus Dei is cast, sensationalized, as a Masonic, power-grabbing cabal. But now, former members have brought other allegations to light. 2 years ago, federal prosecutors in Argentina started an investigation into 44 women's claims of labour exploitation and human trafficking against Opus Dei. And in September this year, prosecutors took the first step towards bringing criminal proceedings, formally requesting that a judge summon several senior leaders of Opus Dei in the region to testify. You're listening to the documentary from the BBC World Service. I'm Antonia Cundy, and I'm a special investigations reporter at the Financial Times. I've spent the past year uncovering former members' allegations of exploitation and psychological abuse against Opus Dei. And on this week's Heart and Soul, you're going to hear some of their claims. The case in Argentina created headlines around the world and led new people from other countries to come forward with claims against Opus Dei. They've grouped together in online forums where they share stories about the organisation that was supposed to bring them closer to God, but instead, they say exploited them and their faith. Raquel is one of those individuals. She lives in Guatemala and joined Opus Dei when she was 17 years old. Today, she's 36 and is no longer a member of the group. She runs a successful bakery in the small town where she lives, selling sticky fruit buns and buttercream cakes. Raquel's family are vegetable farmers. Their house sits in a patchwork of green fields. The youngest of 10 siblings, Raquel was raised a devout Catholic. But her experience in Opus Dei left her faith shaken to the core.
I think faith is the most important thing in my family. Me and my cousins who lived on the same block used to get together every night to pray and sing the rosary. I think I was 9 years old when I stood before an audience to talk about the gospel. Many people who knew me believed that I was going to be a nun.
Globally, there are several different types of Opus Dei members. Most are married and live in their own homes. Around a quarter are celibates, who live in strictly single-sex Opus Dei centres together. Then there are assistant numeraries, whose specific vocation is to take care of the domestic work in those Opus Dei centres. Only women can be assistant numeraries, and there are around 4,000 of them in Opus Dei today. While most other Opus Dei members are expected to have a university degree, over the years, assistant numeraries appear to have mainly been recruited from lower socioeconomic backgrounds. Most that I spoke to didn't finish secondary school and were recruited to join Opus Dei through hospitality training schools that were managed by members of the organisation. This is what happened to Raquel. One of her brothers is a priest in Opus Dei, which is how she first came across the organisation. Her family sent her to a hospitality school in the town of Zinil.
It was 1 week after my 15th birthday. I was just a girl.
Raquel, when you got to the hospitality school, what was daily life like there?
We got up very early at 5 in the morning, and then at 9 p.m. we were supposed to make an examination of conscience before resting. We had to turn off our lights at 9:45 p.m. whether or not we still had work to do. As a student, I was working all the time.
Raquel cooked and cleaned for up to 14 hours a day, 7 days a week. She says she officially joined Opus Dei as an assistant numerary 2 years into the hospitality school when she was 17. But she says she was treated like a member and expected to live like one from the very beginning.
From 2003, I lived as an assistant numerary. They made me follow all the rules, the plan of life, mass, daily prayer, reading of the gospel, spiritual reading, and weekly confession.
Raquel says the assistant numerary's lives were heavily restricted. She was only allowed to read certain books, so as a young adult, she read Harry Potter 7 times. She wasn't allowed to watch TV or listen to the radio by herself, only the Opus Dei news once a week. She was accompanied almost everywhere she went. One of the hardest things was being cut off from her family. Her emails were monitored, and she was only permitted to see them twice a year. Years of hard labour led her health to suffer. Now aged just 36, Raquel says she has arthritis in her arms.
My arms always hurt, all the time. Even when I was sleeping, it was an unbearable pain that would wake me up at night. It's not a nice thing to say, but the veins in my legs are damaged from standing still for so long.
What has been the effect of all those years of work? What effect has that had on you?
Sobre todo la autoestima.
Above all, self-esteem, and they always made me believe that I was the worst, that I was always disobedient, that I wasn't dedicated enough, that I was always selfish, that I wasn't generous. When someone compliments me now, I believe they're making fun of me, that they're being sarcastic, you know?
Opus Dei declined our request for an interview, but they did respond with a written statement saying they were saddened to hear of Raquel's experience while she was a member of the organisation. Raquel says she officially joined when she was 17. Opus Dei says she was 19 years old when she joined the organisation. They also say, Zunil School is a non-profit educational initiative supervised by the country's state authorities. Through a scholarship system, this hospitality school provided hundreds of girls with the opportunity to continue their secondary education instead of going directly into the workforce at a young age. They say that there was no work at the school, but as part of their curriculum, students had supervised practical sessions. They say there was supervision regarding what students could watch or read, but that it was age appropriate. They say parents and pupils were aware of these school rules and freely accepted them. It's not easy to get access to Opus Dei's inner workings. Many of the internal guidelines aren't shared with the public. But I've spoken to several people who held senior positions within the organisation. One of them is Adriana Wackelin. She was a member of Opus Dei for over 14 years, before leaving in 1999. During her last years in Opus Dei, she was a sub-director running one of the administration centres in Guadalajara, Mexico, where assistant numeraries cooked and cleaned for the men in affiliated centres. Adriana says that many assistant numeraries there had problems with their mental health.
One girl, suddenly I heard her screaming and she wanted to jump up the window. I mean, we had severe cases of depression, of mental illness, I mean, people that saw things. I do think that that was because of all the hard work.
What was it about their living conditions that you think made so many mentally unwell?
Well, one thing, it was the hard work. I mean, we were working many hours a day, 7 days a week. I mean, that gets you tired and tiredness gets you sick. The other will be the lack of real affection. We were living all together, apparently happy, but we will be very much alone. Because you could not have any, they call it particular friendship. You could not be close to anybody. I mean, if they saw that you were talking to someone more often or that you will be doing things with someone like, let's go to the park together, they won't let you do that.
Did they fear that that was a romantic relationship or did they just
not want friendships? No friendships, no bonding relationships.
Why?
Well, I guess because one, I mean, will be the belief that all your feelings, thoughts and everything will be forgotten. Maybe it also had to do with people not being able to talk to each other about what they really thought and felt so that no rebellions will come up. But if you didn't let people talk to each other, it was easier to control everybody.
These women and girls who were so mentally unwell, were the senior management of the house or the center aware of it? And how did they respond?
They were fully aware. They will take them to the doctor. But it was only to some psychiatrists that were selected, maybe that were in Opus Dei. And most of them did not go for therapy. They just went accompanied by the director of the house. And the director is the one that will talk and will say, she is this, 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 she does that, that, that. And they will give them the medicine. And the director had the medicine under her control and will give the person the pill every morning or every night.
Adriana also says neither she nor the assistant numeraries were paid.
Well, supposedly they were, but they never saw the money. I mean, in papers they were.
Were you ever overseeing that?
Yes. I mean, I did the financial reports. There was a place where it said salary, no, for numerous assistants, but that was it. It was only in papers.
They wouldn't actually receive it?
No, 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 no. Nobody saw that money. I mean, we didn't have any money in our hands. If you needed something, they will give you a little money and you can buy something. But you did not have an account or anything. I mean, the day I left, I had zero pesos. We had no social security during all those years. By the time we went out, like I was 30, I had friends that were 40 already. There was no time to get a pension. So we are facing now with people in their 50s, 60s that had no savings, no pension, no medical insurance. And nobody's doing anything about that. I think that is very, very, very grave, very, very bad. And if you are talking about charity, if you are talking about this social help that the church is supposed to do and Christians are supposed to give each other, I mean, where is all that? And I mean, that's what bothered me the most and basically what made me leave, that charity was not lived in the proper way. I mean, there was no charity. It was selfish interest only.
Opus Dei responded that they were saddened to hear Adriana's claims. They stated, "We believe specifically linking Opus Dei to the onset of mental health problems is speculation and does not reflect reality. We completely refute the premise that membership of Opus Dei constitutes psychological abuse, as has been unfairly alleged. This is to wholly misconstrue the true nature of the organization and the freedom of choice to belong to it, and which all individuals have affirmed and reaffirmed up to 7 times during the initial years of choosing their vocation." They say that in general, it's not uncommon for people in relationships of trust to recommend specialists, but that the choice of medical practitioner is always free. When a member of Opus Dei attends a medical appointment with an individual, they said it's done to offer support. Managing medication and appointments are the individual's responsibility, but they said that Opus Dei would assist if asked to do so. Raquel said that when she was an assistant numerary, she was made to sign monthly payslips, but that she never actually received any money. When she finally left Opus Dei in 2019, she'd worked there for over 16 years, and she left with almost nothing.
I don't remember exactly how much they paid me as a settlement in the end. I think it was enough to live for 2 or 3 months in my family home. That's all I received, nothing more.
Opus Dei said, Raquel had an employment contract and her work was paid in accordance with the labour laws of her country, Guatemala. I asked Raquel why it took her so long to leave. She said that Opus Dei members and directors of the centre made her feel like she couldn't leave, that she'd be condemned, and so would her family. By chance, she met another Opus Dei member who told her this wasn't true. It gave Raquel the courage to finally leave. Raquel, how did it feel when you realize that you could still have a relationship with God without Opus Dei?
En realidad esto ha sido difícil, ¿no?
This has actually been difficult.
Y perdón si me quiebro porque...
And I apologize if I break down. Yes, I have argued with God. Why did he allow me to experience that? And I even... I wanted to stop going to Mass. One day, I told my mother not to mention God to me anymore. My family has always practiced their faith and trusted God. They surrender everything to him. This has been very hard for me because... I often wonder, why does God allow them to use him to cause so much harm?
So, Raquel, your brother is still a member of Opus Dei. He's a priest in the organization. Is that difficult for you?
He supported me and has been supporting me a lot these past 5 years, but when I told him that I had written an account of my experiences and it was going to be shared on YouTube, I realized that since that day, he had been a little more distant. And that makes me sad because I didn't want this to affect him.
This crisis of faith has left Raquel shaken. She doesn't know how or on what terms she'll recover her relationship with God. You're listening to the documentary from the BBC World Service.
If you're hearing this, you're probably already listening to in-depth stories on BBC Podcasts. But did you know that you can listen to them without ads? Get award-winning storytelling from the BBC like World of Secrets, Believe in Magic and Uncanny, plus other great BBC podcasts from news to history to comedy, all ad-free. Simply subscribe to BBC Podcasts Premium on Apple Podcasts or listen to Amazon Music with a Prime membership. Spend less time on ads and more time with BBC Podcasts.
I'm Antonia Cundy, and I'm a special investigations reporter at the Financial Times. For this episode of Heart and Soul, I'm meeting people whose faith has been shaken after being involved for many years with the Catholic organization Opus Dei. Raquel isn't alone. Agora Colloquios is a global community where many former Opus Dei members at different levels of the organization have shared stories of abuse and exploitation. They meet online regularly to discuss their experiences and offer support to one another. As part of my reporting at the FT, I've spoken to dozens of individuals with similar stories.
As long as Opus Dei's finances aren't affected, there will be no change. As they say in Mexico, kicks in the wallet hurt the most. Yes, it's possible to calculate how much compensation they should pay in Mexico by adding up the contributions established by the Mexican Institute of Social Security. That would be the way to do it. Whether I'm planning to pursue it? Yes, I want to do it. To my understanding, cases regarding Social Security contributions do not expire in Mexico.
I think nothing can compensate for what we lost. No money can make up for the years we lost. I'm 56 years old. I was in Opus Dei for 24 years and I left 14 years ago. I'm not planning to waste any more of my life on them.
Also in the group is Christina from Spain. We've changed her name and revoiced with an actor to protect her identity.
Most people who join Opus Dei join as minors. Although it isn't written in the official Opus Dei documents or statutes, the age of admission is 14 and a half years old. So justice for me would be for this to be forbidden by law and for the church to prohibit minors from joining Opus Dei, so that this never happens again.
Opus Dei's statutes say that no one can formally join the organisation under the age of 18. But young people who request to join can become junior candidates from the age of 14 and a half. Former members say that while junior candidates aren't technically members, they are treated as though they are. So that by the time the formal admission process comes around at 18, they're effectively indoctrinated. Opus Dei told us, people asked to join Opus Dei of their own free will, and the minimum age for making a formal commitment is 18, after at least 1.5 years of preparation and discernment. We put to them allegations of an unwritten practice of admitting people from the age of 14 and a half. They said that junior candidates are people aged between 14 and a half and 16 and a half, who have expressed their desire to join Opus Dei when they reach the required age. They said that parents' permission is always required for them to be a junior candidate, and they said that junior candidates are not and cannot be members of Opus Dei. While the criminal investigation in Argentina is ongoing, Opus Dei is facing new civil claims in the UK and Ireland. Malcolm Johnson is a lawyer at UK-based Lyme Solicitors. He's now representing five women who say they were emotionally and psychologically abused while they were working for the organisation as assistant numeraries in the UK and Ireland during the 1970s, 80s and 90s. They're also seeking compensation for alleged unpaid wages and pension contributions.
So these are methods employed by cults worldwide. First of all, they are working extremely hard every day. So they're exhausted. If you're exhausted, you cannot think straight because you're always working. Secondly, you're always subject to a never-ending stream of indoctrination. For instance, in Opus Dei, you had a time every week where you had to confess your sins and what you weren't doing correctly. There's a huge amount of control as to where you go.
So cult is a word that is most often associated with sort of fringe groups and societies. And obviously, Opus Dei is part of the Roman Catholic Church. It's a very mainstream organization with billions of believers worldwide.
What we're talking about is cult-like behaviors. So it's probably best to concentrate on the behaviors that we see from senior members of the organization towards junior members. So you have shady recruitment practices. We're a catering college, but actually we're here to recruit you. Then you have the indoctrination. There is only one way to God, and it's our way. If you step out of line, you're going to hell. You then have practices which are designed to affect people psychologically. So self-mortification, fraternal correction, constant watching, isolation of recruits and members from their families and from their friends and from the outside world. These are cult-like behaviors. These are the things that we see in Opus Dei.
Why is it that victims can't sue Opus Dei as one whole global organization?
You wouldn't sue the headquarters of Opus Dei in Rome. You would target your claim against the office of Opus Dei that exists in the jurisdiction in the country in which your abuse occurred. So you would find the name of the charity or the company that runs Opus Dei in that country, and then that would be your defendant. So our first letter of claim was directed against the main charity that runs Opus Dei in England. The problem with the Vatican is that it's rather like the Football Association. It's a regulator. It doesn't control clubs. It regulates them. The Vatican has very little control in reality over Opus Dei. This is an organization that can pretty much go its own way.
In a statement, Opus Dei said, "We have confidence in the Irish and UK legal systems and welcome the opportunity to address the issues fully and transparently." Labour laws and statutes of limitation vary from country to country, so everyone's situation is different, including Raquel's.
And would you ever be motivated to take legal action yourself, whether criminal or civil?
Quisiera hacerlo, pero...
I would like to do it, but I'm afraid they can overpower me as an individual. I see that in Guatemala, Opus Dei is everywhere, so it feels like I have nothing going in my favour.
What would justice look like for you?
Lo de pedir disculpas o perdón.
Publicly apologising or asking for forgiveness would be something very interesting, because Opus Dei never does this. If they apologise to me personally, it would be difficult for me to tell them I forgive them, because I know their apology wouldn't be sincere. It would be just performative, you know? And for all the years we lost there, it would be fair that they compensated us for those years. We lost our youth, all the dreams that we were unable to achieve during that time and perhaps we could have achieved now.
Why do you feel that it's important to speak about what happened to you?
I would like for families who still have members inside to know what their daughters are experiencing.
One of the things they used to tell us is that we were the ticket to heaven for each member of our family, that we would guarantee their entry into heaven. It is a big lie because each person earns their own place in heaven.
We asked Opus Dei for comment, and they said, "We are so saddened to hear of Raquel and Adriana's experiences while they were in Opus Dei. Where it is true that we have failed them, today's organisation wishes to sincerely apologise and seeks their forgiveness. Opus Dei is part of the Catholic Church and is composed of people who have a strong faith and a deep desire to do good for the greater well-being of society. But clearly we are not exempt from making mistakes, no matter how unintentional. We know we must be ready not only to apologise, but, just as importantly, to do what we can to make amends. To this end, healing and resolution protocols have been established, aimed at addressing any negative experiences that any member may have encountered. Of course, we are truly saddened to hear of some individuals' negative experiences and invite anyone with concerns about past alleged misconduct to contact the safeguarding office in their country."
What is your daily life like since leaving Opus Dei?
This year, I started a degree in clinical psychology.
Why clinical psychology?
Because I decided to try to achieve my goals again, to pursue my childhood dream. In my case, I've had a life which very few people can understand. There must be other people out there who have had similar experiences, perhaps not within Opus Dei, but who have had equally painful experiences. I would like to help those people. But I think that before helping others, I have to heal myself first.
Raquel has built a new life for herself, but she's still struggling to reconcile an important aspect of it, her faith.
I have gone to Mass many times. I have felt the joy of feeling that I am a daughter of God because I have felt comfortable enough to argue with God. And on some occasions, I have even felt him embracing me. Sometimes I would like to stop thinking about him, but then I realise he's with me. It's like a constant back and forth, over and over. Until this phase of resentment, which is very strong at the moment, is over, I'm not going to confession, and therefore I'm not taking communion. I can see that God has accompanied me and respected my decision. I feel like my relationship with him is starting to get stronger. I hope this happens. And I haven't lost hope that after this process, my relationship with God will be even stronger than before I joined Opus Dei. I want him to be at the centre of my life, and I hope to achieve this. I think this will help me strengthen my faith.
You've been listening to the documentary on the BBC World Service. The presenter was me, Antonia Cundy, and the producer was Rachel Briggs.
If you're hearing this, you're probably already listening to in-depth stories on BBC Podcasts. But did you know that you can listen to them without ads? Get award-winning storytelling from the BBC like World of Secrets, Believe in Magic and Uncanny, plus other great BBC podcasts from news to history to comedy, all ad-free. Simply subscribe to BBC Podcast Premium on Apple Podcasts or listen to Amazon Music with a Prime membership. Spend less time on ads and more time with BBC Podcasts.